Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
All right, you're very welcome along to our Saturday panel. With us today, Colin Kelly, the former Louth manager, Matty McGleenan, the current Cavan football manager, and Andy McEntee, the current Meath football manager. Lads, you're all very welcome. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good afternoon.
Thank you.
Just saying there, in the ad break, Colin, you're a free man now.
Yeah, free for the time being. But doing a bit with the club juveniles, under eights, and doing a couple of coaching sessions for different clubs. But overall, free man, yeah. Life back.
What's that like?
It's great. It's... You know, you have timed yourself that you didn't have initially, but the whole thought process around trying to plan and think about the thing, you know, changes, and you've just a different focus on life. But it won't be too long before the bug bites you again, and you'll be looking to get back in.
Right. So you're not done forever with top level management. You're not soured on that.
No. Listen, it's part of what I do. It's, you know, it's been a huge part of my life, and it's something that I've always been real into is GAA, and from a, you know, spectator initially to a playing point of view, then going down to the coaching route. So I don't expect to, you know, put the feet up and not do anything going forward. That's not the type I am. But I just felt 3 years, you know, with Loud was long enough in the dressing room, and they're a great bunch of lads, and, you know, maybe a new voice would take it to a different level.
But when you say take it to a different level, you got back-to-back promotions, so you just went from 4 to 3 to 2, and was there not part of you thinking, I want to see what this team is like as a Division 2 team?
And you know what people don't understand outside the group is, I've probably, like fellas like Anthony Williams, I started coaching Anthony Williams as a 12-year-old in the local club, and, you know, in 2012 I had a lot of those guys in an under-21 team, and I suppose there's 3 or 4 of them I would have won a club championship with as a player: Pádraig Smith, James Califf, and Pádraig Rath. So, you know, it's more than 2-3 years in the dressing room. These guys have been listening to me probably for 10 and 12 years in some cases, and you know, you're just all too familiar with them, and they're a great bunch of lads. You know, fellas like Rory Moore, I've been managing since 2008.
Right.
From club to under 21 to...
You were sick of the side of them, is that what you're saying?
No, I'd say more so they were the sick side of me. And it was brilliant. A couple of promotions was excellent, and, you know, just when you see what Keane O'Neill has done now, where he's got his couple of promotions and his championships went too hot the first couple of years, but they've got it right now, and that reservoir of fitness is built up. I found it probably caught us out a little bit over the last two championships with the work we put in during the winter months, and I suppose we would be a better team probably in 12 months time for the experiences of playing Division 2.
Yeah.
And it would allow us to progress a little before.
But somebody else is going to get the benefit of all that work. You're not going to actually be the one that kind of sees the, geez, I knew this was going to happen.
Yeah, but I'd be probably sipping back with, you know, wife and family, and actually going to the matches and, you know, enjoying it for once, and not having to sit there and you know, carry the weight of the world on your shoulders about, you know, and that's not pressure from anybody else, that's pressure I put on myself. You know, have high expectations all the time. So, you know, it's a different outlet, and, you know, as I said to you, predominantly I'm a proud Loud man and a Loud fan, so I would enjoy going and watching them achieving, and it's a different perspective, and as I said to you, they'll be probably glad to get away from me for a couple of months now.
And will it be somebody entirely new, do you think, or will it be somebody from your background team that comes in, or do you have a strong view on that?
I don't really. You know, I've, you know, it's not something I really thought about. I'm sure there's a process where the county board will go through, and you know, you can second guess these things all you want, but first of all, you know, someone has to want the job, and then they'll go through the process. So you could second guess things, like there's names been mused about there: Paddy Crozier, Colin Nally, Wayne Kearns has done a fantastic job with the Loud Miners there in the Leinster final tomorrow. I don't know what Wayne's situation is, and then you don't know who from outside is going to look for the job. So overall, it's not something I've thought about.
Yeah,
I'm sure. Enough. They'll go through the process in the proper fashion, and we'll get the right man for the job, and, you know, we'll be back, and it'll be an upward curve again, and we'll be continued to rise.
Andy, Meath were on the verge of taking Donegal out of the championship, which would have been a big scalp. I mean, there was a lot of talk about Donegal's league campaign at the end of the league campaign, how impressive they'd been and how they'd bedded in that new team. Is there any peace in the fact that it's, you go out to a good team like Donegal at home, or is that even more sickening because you were so close?
There's very little, really. You know, the truth of the matter is, we were in a position where we could have won the game, and I suppose ultimately, you look back on it, we weren't good enough to close out the game. That's the bottom line. You know, we put ourselves in a really good position, conceded a goal maybe 10 or 12 minutes to go, and most people would have thought, you know, that's it, Donegal just close up shop. But we responded well, got a goal, got a point to go ahead. And you'd say, okay, look at what we're set here, but we didn't close it out, and we can look at all the factors that were involved, and we can blame anybody we like, but the truth of the matter is, we weren't good enough to see it through.
Yeah, that's the sickening part, because you're so close.
Yeah, that's disappointing. Yeah, it is sickening, and you'd say, you know, all the signs were that we were good enough to be there, but we just weren't good enough to see it through, and that's probably the stage of development that the team is at. So
yeah.
We were talking outside about you know, the situation with a lot of teams that you know, when it comes to the crunch, you know, you just don't continue to do the right things. And in those last 10 minutes or so, we did a lot of good things, but we didn't do enough of them.
It's a relatively straightforwardly diagnosed problem that, you know, you can sit here and calmly say that's our issue. How do you go about fixing that?
Well, I suppose unfortunately we weren't used to playing Division One teams, and there is an extra physicality involved, and there's an extra tempo to the games, and I suppose one of the things that disappointed me as much having lost the game was that we're going to have to wait another 6 or 7 months before we get involved again, and even then. We won't be playing Division One teams, and I think if you want to be making the progress that we'd like to be making, you got to be consistently testing yourself against these teams.
Yeah. So does that mean that your entire plan for next season gets flipped a bit? And I know traditionally everybody, the fans, don't really want to hear that, you know, your focus is going to be on the league as opposed to the championship. But that the most important thing that can happen to Meath football next year, irrespective almost of what happens in the championship, is that you get promotion.
No, I think that's a little bit simplified. I mean, and that would be ignoring the fact that we put a big emphasis on the league this year. It's not as if we were minding ourselves, you know, saying, okay, we'll really concentrate on the championship. We didn't. I mean, our number one goal this year was to get into the Division One, and we didn't achieve it. However, close again, it's kind of moral victories or whatever. I mean, we were within a whisker of getting promoted. We didn't get promoted. We were in a whisker of beating Donegal. We didn't beat Donegal. So, I mean, I wouldn't say our plans would be any different next year than they were this year.
Is it about psychology then in those last 10 minutes rather than the physicality of the Donegal team, or is it a combination of that? So it's the physicality to allow yourself to continue to make the good decisions.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's constantly, you know, that's regularly the story with teams who are trying to make the breakthrough. I mean, it just when it came down to it, a couple of poor decisions here and there. You look at all the scores they got, and you're talking about, you know, getting dispossessed. I think we got dispossessed maybe for 5 or 6 of their scores.
Yeah.
Whether, you know, a couple of poor kickouts where we got turned over on the kickout, we'd won it. We get turned over, little bits and pieces like that, and the game goes against you. But. I don't think it's a mental thing. We reacted pretty well throughout the league to a couple of bad performances, and we reacted pretty well to a bad performance against Kildare, and even within the game in Donegal, a couple of things that went wrong for us.
Like the goal, you came straight back and scored a goal yourselves with 10 minutes to go against the Division 1 team, because it seems to me from the outside like there is a bit of momentum behind you, and that this overall is quite a good season, and yet you kind of seem heartbroken here sitting down to you.
Yeah, well, look at. I mean, the lads will say the same to you. I mean, there's not a waking minute that it doesn't occupy your mind. It takes over your life, and then all of a sudden it's over. It is over. We don't get to play another game until January, and that's something that I'd never even thought about until afterwards. I'm going, how do we progress if we're not playing? And regardless of what it looks like from the outside, it is a hard one to take.
Do you have an answer for that in terms of like how do you progress?
Well, I mean, look at you're hoping that players continue to look after themselves, they continue to do the right thing,
yeah,
and that when you do get back to training, whenever we're allowed back to train, when is that? Sometime in 2019 or something.
Yeah,
like
Santi
that.
Comes.
Oh, Santi. All right. Okay. But when we do get back to training, that we're not starting from the same point that we started last year.
Yeah. System seems skewed in favour of the better teams automatically, who go longer in the season, get the warm weather, get the training sessions in their back. They come back a couple of weeks later than everybody else, but they've actually got an extra whole season's worth of work done.
Yeah, but even now when you think about it, I mean, the teams that you're trying to catch up with have an extra 2 months.
Yeah.
They have an extra 2 months of
conditioning
and playing together, one thing another,
building partnerships,
and then as you said, yeah, all that, yeah. all the good stuff,
yeah.
Where you're either training for a game or playing games, and then you turn around and we get maybe an extra week,
yeah,
or 2 weeks
in October,
yeah,
or whenever.
Yeah.
What happened to Cavan, Matty? We saw the score at halftime in the last game. I was, geez, that's great. Cavan are going to be. They're hurtling towards a fairly straightforward victory against Tip, and then fair play to Tipperary, obviously they roared back against you, but have you managed to understand exactly what happened?
I think it's probably the nature of our season. Playing Division 1, we were in similar situations 3 or 4 times where we had absolutely super first halves, put ourselves well into the game, and for a 10 minute window where we sort of lose control of the game, or we're not winning the breaking ball, or we're not doing the fundamentals really, really well. And the problem is this year, all those games were top teams, and they punish you, and they're ruthless. And that has certainly been my learning curve this calendar year at the highest level. If you make a mistake, you make a fundamental error on the football field, they put you to bed, they put you to the sword. And that's exactly what happened. You know, Andy has touched on it there. I think the experience of Tipperary going to the semi-final last year really stood to him that 10 minute window, certainly in the second half, where, you know, the game was put to them. What he's going to do, boys, is this the end of your road, or do you go at it? And they come at us, and, you know, we responded with 10 to go and had a super 10 minutes at the end of the second half. But listen, it's not enough, and it's something we're going to have to learn from.
Yeah, again, how do you learn from that? Like, what is that, just sitting down with players and asking what happened, why did you make this decision, or is it trying to replicate that instance again in training, putting everybody under intense pressure, and then going, okay, stop, you made the wrong decision there, let's fix this? Well,
I would look at it from the point of view, the last month has been our best training, absolutely fantastic. It's sort of taken me, with me only getting into the job, it's been, this is an 11 game season, and Andy has touched on it there. It's not like coming out of club football where you have 22, 23 games when I was with Scotstown. You have 11 games. Next year, if be it Division 1 or Division 2, as we'll be in Division 2 next year, each of those games is a championship match in my mind. And you have 7 games to prepare you for the championship. And you have to get it right. And it's not a case of you have 2 or 3 warm-up games to get yourself into it. You have to have everything conditioned, everything, all your jigsaw in place, and you're ready to go. And that's been the huge learning curve for me going forward. I think Cavan in the first half, even at the end of the season, Cavan have been absolutely fantastic. We had 11 men scored against Tipperary, and people will lose sight of that fact. And, you know, I go back to the Monaghan game in the National League, and it was 7 points all. And I think possibly 2 men scored. So as far as how far Cavan has come down the road, I think we've travelled down the road immensely. They have such a tradition. My goodness, they want to win. They will do anything to win an Ulster title, progress in the championship, and that's a huge starting block for me going forward in terms of this here team. There's huge potential within the team. It's getting that self-belief to go the distance is probably the simplest way. We have yet to go for 70 minutes football. The max this year, I've got them high-intensity championship football for about 45 minutes, and that's not good enough at this level.
Again, is that about conditioning? Is that about mentality? Why is there 25 minutes where they're not at it?
I suppose it's a suggestion. It's a mentality. You know, we have, the only team that we didn't play to the top flight this year was Offaly. Everything else, those teams have that wee bit of extra just self-belief in themselves, and that's the extension of the summer, where they've continued to play a higher level football continuously. I do believe that's something we can train and we can prepare.
Yeah.
When I was late into this football team, it has taken me it took me, listen, I'll be honest with you, it took me prior to the end of the National League before I really got to grips of the team. We had a lot to do in terms of balance. There was lots of chopping and change in terms of team selection. So I've really found my feet this year. So I'd be suggesting that, listen, I think we'll be a better team going forward next year. And I love this level, I have to say. And the two boys is here longer than me at this. I love it. My goodness, you know, the atmosphere around the National League games this year was fantastic. I'm even thinking towards next year's National League. I can't wait for it actually to start again, get back out training with the boys. The teams are going to play Meath and Louth, you know, Cork. There's nothing between those top 12 teams between Division 1 and Division 2, except for possibly for the two or three at the top end. Everybody else has a boxer's chance of winning that football match.
Yeah, yeah. This was your first season as an intercounty manager as well, right?
Yeah, yeah.
How did you find that transition from a very successful club team to an intercounty team? And just, I guess, in terms of how you want the team to play and how easy that is to go, okay, this is my belief in how we should play. You have to listen to everybody else's ideas, and you're laughing at that. Is it a ridiculous notion?
I think... Yeah, maybe I was a bit naive coming into it. We played our way through the league, the way that, you know, I felt I like teams to set up. We were scoring heavily enough, but we were also conceding.
Yeah,
and then you turn around and we played Kildare in the championship, and even having played Louth, I mean, we ran up a heavy score, but we also conceded. 3-10, 3-9.
Not enough.
Too much for me, not enough for you. But you know, and then you're gonna say, okay, well then, you know, when we saw what we conceded against Kildare, you say, okay, well we gotta do something here. And whether you like it or whether you're not, it's a results business. It's not an entertainment business. You need to get results.
Yeah.
And we tweaked things slightly. And I know certain people didn't like the way we looked or the way we set up against Sligo, but then again we did something similar against Donegal, and we were very close, very close to getting a good result. So
the change from the Kildare match in the championship to the Sligo game, was that easy enough to communicate to the players? Have you already tried that in training sessions throughout the year, or is that like, look, you're intercounty footballers, if we're telling you to play with a sweeper or whatever the difference is, or if we're going to be a slightly more defensive system, I expect you all to be able to understand that from a conversation. How does that work?
There's not too much. I mean, they're all smart fellas, they're all in college, so I mean, you know, they should be able to understand plain English, and they understood. I mean, we weren't reinventing the wheel or anything like that. It was fairly straightforward. We were just maybe trying to come up with a way of executing what we've been talking about pretty much for the last 6 months.
Yeah.
We found it. Yeah, it happened relatively quick and relatively easily. We just got to be better at it.
Defending.
Yeah.
Is it as basic as that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, is there a specific defensive structure? Is there like something that you've seen other teams do and go, yeah, I like that, or we have a bit of that? What is your defensive philosophy?
Look, I think the way modern football has gone, I mean, when you don't have the ball, you defend. And it's like, I mean,
hold on, Andy, I'm taking notes. We'll play you next year, lad. Just hold on a second.
I'm aware of that, Matt. I'm aware of that. We were just talking about outside. I mean, you know, everybody wants to be a footballer now. Everybody wants to be a forward or a midfielder. It's hard to get a good old-fashioned stopper at the back, you know. And that kind of, those defensive qualities, they're hard to come by. You have to get fellas who are ruthless enough that are going to have to do what they have to do to stop the opposition from scoring.
Yeah. Where do you find them?
There's quite a few counties. You could go around and look for a few. Well, I mean, look at, you know, as I say, the top teams have a very strong defensive structure, and they have guys who'll do whatever they have to do.
Yeah. In terms of the philosophy of, like, it's when you don't have the ball, everybody's a defender. Is that also?
It's the evolution of the game. The modern game is you know, 15 attackers, 15 defenders, and it's gone from the day of back, you know, when we were playing, where you won your individual battles. You still talk about individual battles, but you know, from a defensive point of view, I think what the top teams do, everyone plays a similar system. You know, they're all getting to defend that 45-yard line and dropping in behind it and pressing out. Could be plus one, plus two defenders. The top teams do it better. They tackle more aggressively. You know, they've and it's part of the whole makeup. Everything about them is more aggressive, you know, through their tackling, through through their offensive play, and you know, they want it more, and that's a progression. That's not something you can get within 5 or 6, you know, months, 7 months, and it takes a good while. That's my belief on it, and you know, as I said to you, it's the modern game is evolving to what it is, and you know, you either go with it or you fail.
Yeah, but I presume everybody has, like, of those top teams, everybody has a fairly similar approach. It's just that some teams have slightly better players, or they've been at it a bit longer in terms of the execution.
Listen, obviously, if they're winning All-Ireland, they've better players, and we all strive to get there, and we all talk about our juvenile systems and our development squads and what we're bringing through, and you know, some people are resourced an awful lot better, even at a younger age, from the coaching point of view to the facilities to the quality of player to get through, and a lot of it stems even back to what clubs are doing at coaching level. But state the obvious, yeah, they have better players. If you take Tyrone, take Dublin, take Kerry, you know, take Mayo, they have a real, real high skill set.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm just naming a few. Like, take for instance the fella Andy and them came up against a couple of weeks ago. Is there a better exponent of the modern game than Ryan McHugh? Small in stature, big in heart, gets up and down the field. He's a live wire pocket rocket. And
everybody knows he's going to be the one arriving to score the goal, and nobody can stop him doing it. That's kind of the sign of a great player.
No, he's been stopped, all right. And it just, I suppose, sometimes it depends on the method in which you want to stop him.
Normally you're supposed to get a black card for how most teams are stopping him at the moment.
I don't know what you're supposed to get a black card for anymore.
Well, that's
I
a mean, good point.
There's certain interpretations.
But Jamie Clark probably knows what you're supposed to get one for. The one, just on the point about the tackling, the one difference between Kildare this year and last year is that their tackling is much better this year than it was last year. I would have noticed that against you guys in particular, that they were good on the tackles. That the difference in the scoring chances created by both teams probably wasn't huge, but that there were a couple of instances where in previous seasons Kildare would have conceded goals where they actually made last ditch tackles against you guys in the championship, that were big momentum shifters.
I mean, we looked at the game in the first round of the league. Was a game where we got soundly beaten in as well, but in that particular game we actually created a number of goal chances.
Yeah, they took theirs and you didn't, and that was the difference. Yeah, it looked like a hammering, but it wasn't really.
It wasn't, well,
on the scoreboard it was.
Hammering's a hammering, you know. Yeah. But it was a game that took on sort of funny dimensions in that they, as I say, they got, I think, maybe 4 goal chances, scored 3 of them.
And they were all top corner as well.
They were all decent finishes. Yeah. I think we got 7 and we got none. We scored none of them. So when it came to the championship, I think you're right. Kildare are a big team. They are as big a team as we've played all year physically, and I mean Owen Doyle sits in that position there, and he's very strong. He sits in front of the full back line, and it is hard to get those goal scoring chances, and you have to take them when you're playing. Just as Matt was saying, you're playing these top teams. They get a chance, bang, they take them, they put you to the sword. If you don't take them, you're not going to win the game.
Yeah, I guess, Matt, we're talking here about, as you said, this is 3 Division 2 teams next season, and we're all looking at how Division 2 teams, Division 3 teams, and even that lower tier Division 1 can catapult themselves into the top rank. And we've seen Tyrone do it over the last couple of years now, where everybody believes that they're realistic All-Ireland contenders. I think everybody believes that. Maybe Down beat them tomorrow and suddenly we're all revisiting that opinion. But how do Cavan and Meath and Kildare and all those teams actually become one of the top 3 or 4? What's the difference?
That's a real good question. I suppose in terms of Tyrone at this point, with my Tyrone hat on me, Tyrone have a self-belief, and it's garnered through club football. I'm in Eglish there, and you know, from underage, it's 3 days a week, 4 days a week then. And that's across Tyrone. Now, I know it's a big county. There's 52, 53 teams. But the intensity and the effort that is goes into training there is unbelievable. And that's throughout junior clubs. You go into Ulster club football, Tyrone teams are in junior Ulster clubs, intermediate Ulster clubs, and they're normally a very hard team to beat in the senior Ulster club.
Yeah.
And that has a huge catalyst around Tyrone. Listen, in Tyrone, football is God. You know, and that's 100% down to what Mickey Hart has done. He has changed a mindset where, you know, I was back in the olden days in 95. It's self-belief. Mickey Hart has instilled a self-belief in Tyrone that is now ridiculous. Like, yes, Down could be at Tyrone on Sunday, tomorrow. No doubt about it. But Tyrone will be at Dublin. They have that self-belief. That's what they're chasing down now. They have that God-given self-belief that, listen, we can go to Kerry, we can go to Dublin, we can beat them boys. And, you know, Mickey Hart is a huge catalyst in that, in continuing that self-belief that, you know, they're now thinking bigger picture all the time.
Yeah, because, like, even 2 years ago, you would have said that maybe this team didn't have good enough players, that it looked like they, you know, a bunch of players had come through from under 21 who had high reputations and didn't quite make it. And then Mickey just waited it out. Some of them have actually started to blossom this year, maybe for the first time. Even last year against Mayo, you know, I think they were favourites heading into that game and they didn't quite perform at a level. And again, there was significant doubt about the league campaign this year, whether or not they were going to follow through in it. We did a couple of good pieces and I referenced it last night with Ed McGinley. He was like, look, I just don't know what the truth is. And then over the last two games, they've been shooting the lights out and they look really, really serious now.
But listen, I go back to, we played Tyrone up in Healy Park in the National League. And we had a fantastic normal story. We had an absolutely first half and Tyrone couldn't live with us. Tyrone went out and made four or five substitutions at the start of the second half and they shot the lights out. They have a group of lads. You have young Lee Brennan there, can't make the Tyrone 15, can't make the Tyrone 21, can't get on the team. And his scoring ratio at club football is ridiculous. They have, in Tyrone, we train all children to score. And I mean from corner back to corner forward, they're trained to score. That they're comfortable going forward, they're very comfortable in their skill set, and you know that's through the college's football, that's through the work done at their clubs, and then you bring that into Tyrone. Like at this moment in time, the Tyrone, their 16s are away down actually in Meath today playing, so they are. And my son's away to it, and he's up from 8:30 this morning to get the Tyrone jersey on him today, and that's what it means to them. They cannot wait. Like he's up bouncing about the place, sharpening the boots. Cleaning, packing bags, and that's in Tyrone. Yeah. They want to play for Tyrone because they want to win and they want to succeed.
Yeah, that's difficult for other counties to replicate.
But it's not. Listen, well,
it comes from success, you know, and then the structures.
Yeah,
when the success that Tyrone have had under Mickey, and then the structures are put in place. And then all of a sudden everybody wants, I mean it's the cool thing, it's the sexy thing, I want to play for Tyrone, there's nothing else out there.
Yeah.
And Dublin have the same, and a lot of it comes, it's interesting you're talking about the colleges there. I mean Dublin have the coaches in all the schools and all the clubs, you know, full time coaches, and that's massive. When you have the proper structure, in you know, John Costello and co have to take a bow here. They've set the structure in place. They set out a blueprint, no pun intended, for, you know, for 5-6 years down the line.
Yeah.
And they're reaping the rewards for it. And it's similar up in Tyrone.
The result is that big superpower becomes a superpower, and all of the other counties get left behind, and it's very difficult for them to catch up. Like it is very difficult for Louth and Kildare and Meath to catch up with the level of investment and the, I call it the industrialisation of the process of finding the best young kids and bringing them forward. So the club game rises, all the clubs get perfectly organised, the county game rises, sponsors row in behind, and then this virtuous circle happens again. Meanwhile,
you know, and Andy spoke about John Costello, like the driving force, there has to be an awful lot of joined up thinking, there has to be a huge passion from within the county to achieve, and everyone has to be thinking same way, same passion, drive it on as best we can. And you know, Matty alluded to the fact that it is a skills based game, you know, and that's where it needs to go.
Yeah, and you would definitely give Dublin credit for doing things right. They've been, you can't in any way argue anything other than that. It's just that what do you do to fix the other counties to get to a point where the kid who's playing under 14 in Athy gets the same benefits as the kid who's playing under 14 in Vincent's?
I think that's, you know, you can't criticise Dublin for being first team to the top of the hill every time.
No,
you know, on every venture, they're the standard
bearers. But equally, we do have a championship situation where that Dublin team plays against Louth. That, you know, there's a 1 in 9 chance that they're going to get a first round championship draw. So, how do you make that equal?
It's not something you can fix overnight. There's a couple of ways it can be fixed. It can be fixed by, you know, putting like with like. That's something that there's a huge debate on at the minute. And it can, you know, it can be fixed by going a long way within your own county to try and get your own house in order, making sure that you're the best you can possibly be. Maybe that mightn't be good enough to get to the levels of Dublin, Kerry's, Tyrone. That passion that's there with Tyrone, and probably started out with, you know, Canavan and Cush and these guys, and, you know, probably before that, 86, and then these guys came along and started winning All-Irelands and contending in the 90s, and, you know, with the foot soldiers for the present group coming along. So you always have that, and you've Kerry, who's constantly, you know, turning out the best individuals in the game and always up there with a par. So from my point of view, I think the county has to become the best it can be, and, you know, you have to look at the business module. And when you look at someone like John Costlow and the drive he has and what he's done, and has said to you, the first at the top of every hill with every venture, you get up to that. And the other way then is, you know, is it a fair competition where you have, you know, it's purely how deep you go into the summer is purely when you go to the lower divisions is purely, you know, decided by who you get in the draw.
Yeah, so it's not a fair competition. We know
well,
that.
Well, look, you know, you can sit here and say, listen, I can have a different view from the boys now because I'm out the gate.
So tell us, go on.
Look, I think, you know, you take a junior club in Louth, you can't win the senior championship.
Well, and it makes perfect sense.
You know,
right?
So
we've had this conversation before.
I know.
You know, it's Division it's, 1, it's, Division 2. And then you have Division 3 and Division 4.
But wouldn't Meath benefit from, like, if you had those four divisions and it was the league, you'd still be playing football in the summer, your team would be getting better, and if you get promotion next year, then you're entitled to win the big thing. But you're not good enough at the moment to win the big thing, and to become good enough, you need to play into the summer. It's just like you're trapped.
Yeah, it's a bit of a vicious circle, yeah.
Barring a miracle of, like, 521s coming through who are all-time superstars to any of those counties, really is what we're talking about. It's like one giant crop of genius coming through to lift a county.
Another big problem you have, and it is a big problem, like Matty was saying, he played 11 games with Cavan this year. We put a big push on the Bourne Cup to get us ready for the National League, because it was my belief that we had to play higher up the divisions to achieve what we want in the summer. So I think we played 5 games in the National League, or 5 games in the Bourne Cup before we played the National League match. But by April, we had played, I think, 8 games in the National League, 13 matches. In 16 weeks,
and then you 2 more games all year,
and then we 2 more games all year. And
three games as well.
That, then you're looking for guys to play Sigerson Cup. You're looking for guys to play under 21. You know, club managers are looking for the start of leagues and get up within the county. So it's a huge congested area.
And can I just point out that no one's listening to you, or that no one seems to be listening to this issue, or no one seems to be really trying to tackle it? What they've done is they've added a bunch more games in the Super 8s.
Well, the only one we crucify in that period is the players, you know, and the best players are the ones that's dragged from Sigerson Cup. The clubs want them, their under 21s want them, the senior manager wants them. And where the blame lies then is, you know, people go around talking about burnout and they blame Colin Kelly, Matty McLean and Andy McIntyre for the way they're treating the county senior players. And you'll find that,
why didn't you just give him one training session off, Colin? What's wrong with you?
Yeah, but you'll find that we probably, well, look, you know, I know how we treated in Louth. We probably, you know, throughout the Auburn Cup we didn't train, we just went from match to match. Now we probably suffered during the summer, but would I take, you know, being 10% fitter against Meath and sacrifice playing in the National League final against Tipperary and getting promotion to Division 2? I don't think I would. And that's a view.
So you think there should be a tiered championship?
I didn't say that.
It sounded like it is.
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that at all.
You said a junior team can't win the senior championship.
And they couldn't win it.
Okay.
So read from that what you want.
You think a tiered championship is the way to go? So honestly, because I think that, like, you guys have to lead this.
But then the romantic side of it is, look at Tourlough O'Brien and Carlow. You know, they've went into Portlaoise. They've probably, you know, done well against Dublin, haven't conceded a goal, and Sean Murphy and fellas like that, brilliant experience, great performances, and they've got a huge draw throughout the championship where they've played all their peers.
Play your provincial championships in February, March, April, and play your league in the summer, and away you go. So you still have your Dublin Carlo in Portlaoise or wherever in February, and everybody actually gets the reintroduction of football for the year, the All-Ireland champions against a Division 3 team or Division 4 team in Carlo. It's a massive thing, but actually what really matters is that Carlo have all their best players playing all summer long, a pre-programme of 7 or 8 games guaranteed. At the end of that year there's promotion or there's relegation, and everybody is like, wow, this is amazing, there's great games, and those matches have to get coverage and they have to get reported on, and people will come to them because they matter.
That's the biggest fear. I think the biggest fear with people in all of this is that, you know, and especially from the players, that they will be cast to one side and it'll become the Dublin Kerry show.
Well, can I fix that immediately by saying you don't give broadcast rights to anybody unless they guarantee that they will show live full commentary and full coverage of the other matches, the way FIFA say if you want the World Cup you have to show the Confederations Cup, the way the IRFU say if you want our November Internationals you have to show our under 21 and our women's game. It's easy. You write them down and you charge money for it.
Straightforward, yeah. That's a reasonable deal.
And there's loads of big brains out there who can work that out. Like,
of course.
Yeah, but you have to understand too, boys, and I think people lose sight of this here. You know, everybody talks about this great Dublin team, and it is a great Dublin team. But besides Mayo's two of the craziest goals I ever seen,
they would have lost
last year. Mayo, the whole landscape of the GAA would have been transformed in this calendar year, except for the two craziest bad touches I ever seen in the football field. And that's, you know, that's the love of this game too. And I think, you know, the big thing, strange enough, I was chatting to Kane O'Neill, we played them in a challenge match maybe 6 or 7 weeks ago, and the one thing it was is, you know, you want a way to get out of bed in the morning time, do not give up. And I would suggest even mentally train harder, because that's a huge catalyst going forward. I see Cavan, and Cavan's part of that Division 2 thing now. There's a talent base there which is class. It's instilling that self-belief of taking one of those bigger teams and going winning a football match, and it can transform your season. That's exactly what has happened to Carlo. You do it right once and you get a win. The psychological boost, Down is the prime example of that there. Down have been written off as last 2 years as no hopers. Eamon Burns took on a team that nobody wanted. In the mighty Down, nobody wanted. And he went through the last 2 years where he got abuse, full stop. And he's built on a catalyst of beating his near neighbours in one championship match. And he's now walking into Tyrone with a no fear factor. Now, where did that come from and how did that happen? That happened in the space of two 70-minute affairs, of two games, where they brought an intensity, they brought a never-give-up attitude, and just die for the jersey. And, you know, I would argue, a county footballer, this is the best days of his life. It's an absolute honour and a privilege to play for your county. And that's the one thing that keeps the GAA motoring and keeps the GAA alive. At the chance that one day, if you can turn up and put all your ducks in a row, you know, you can take somebody.
There are too many counties, though, for whom that's not really the case anymore. Certainly the Division 3 and Division 4 teams, most of whom don't feel like if they do put in all that effort, they're going to end up getting drawn against Dublin or Kerry or Mayo, and they end up getting hammered. And it's ultimately, a lot of that work is for nothing. Do you know what I mean? So
yes, but what is the GAA doing about it? That's the question. I know they sampled the various cups, Tommy Murphy Cup or whatever, a few years ago, but it wasn't taken seriously.
And no, they have to commit to it. They have to commit to it. I mean, you gotta, you know, say, okay, somebody has to be brave here. Someone has to take, you know, show a bit of balls and come out and say, we're gonna run with this. And it means abandoning the current structure there. And of course, you're gonna upset quite a few people along the way of tradition and Leinster Council and Munster and Connacht and Ulster and all that. But you've got to say, is what we have, is that sustainable long term? It's not. And it's not that, I've said this before, it's not that the teams that are playing Dublin, that their supporters won't go to the matches. The real problem for GAA is when Dublin people will stop going to the matches. And they will. They already have.
Yeah.
Because they're, you know, because it's not competitive. And you look at the league, and you're talking about the league. League's a fantastic competition at the moment. You're playing teams of your equal status, and you're going out, and there's great excitement, and it's week in, week out.
And at that provincial venues, I think that really matters. Yeah, and it really helps. Yeah. Like they're full. Like,
yeah.
But like, you take us predominantly around the table here. We're coaches. We're managers. When you know, when we get into a dressing room, we do a thing. We try to prepare teams the best we can be. I think the problem is you know, it's a lot deeper than the opinions we have. everyone has a different opinion. You're shunned for speaking up for it, you know, you're applauded for speaking up for it, but ultimately it's a problem within the GAA. And as Andy rightly said, you know, if Dublin fans stop going into gates, you know, where are you at? But for me, those National League days, you know, when you're getting results and you're standing there and the team's ready to go and you get wins and you get achieving, you know, it's great competition.
And it's at home, and the local community are getting out behind you, and they're kind of touching the feel, and like, yeah.
Well, Matty's talked about the support that he gets down in Cavan, and I know what, you know, I grew up close to the Cavan border. I know how much it means down there. It's the same down in Meath at the moment. You look at Monaghan. Like, Monaghan are the best example for any county over the last number of years. Real small playing population, and they max out every time.
Yeah,
nearly every time. Okay, they came a cropper against Down the last day, but purely because Down adopted a physicality and a determination that, you know, Monaghan weren't ready for on the day. But pretty much every time those guys go out to play, they play to the max.
Yeah, and they've got a really preordained system. Everybody plays every league game apart from a couple that are starred, and the county players don't play in those, but otherwise, and it's written out in advance and everybody knows exactly when they're going to play. Like, obviously they've got the benefit of some of the best administrators that the country's ever had. They all seem to come from Monaghan, so that helps that that kind of system is in place for them. But just to go back to the actual quality of the football that we're seeing this year, what have you seen so far?
I think it's been fabulous.
Yeah,
and I think probably this is one of, well, I suppose it's my first year actually here, so I think this is one of the championships that has been absolutely fantastic. I think the games have lived up to their billing. If you take some of the score lines that you're getting, you know, it's a wee bit hurling like, so it is, in terms of 20 plus points per game. And that's, you know, to an extent, even, I know everybody talks about blanket defences and everything else, I think there's been a lot more emphasis this year put on attacking. And I think, yes.
Well, I thought the game was dead. I watched the Sunday game and they told me this game was, you know, they buried it a couple of years ago. It was over.
No point watching it and not listening to it.
I think, listen, I think that this year definitely, I think, has seen a huge change in terms of how coaches have come out and taken the game on, and even how they have coached in terms of their attacking play and their scoring play. Some of the scores this year from distance, even with teams back in defence, has been absolutely fantastic. The speed of play in terms of the transition from defence to attack has really enhanced, and throwing an odd a goal here and there in championship matches, and it just, I think the teams are, there's a wee bit of a levelling out, even to an extent, you know, besides the top couple.
What's behind that?
I honestly believe it's coaches and the players. As I said to you before, to play for your county is an unbelievable thing. And to go out on Championship Day, I've been very lucky this year. With Cavan, the attitude of the boys is absolutely amazing. It's fantastic. And they sense it themselves, they're 5 or 10% off. And it's fine not 10%, but I have a great belief. What I have seen certainly, and I played Division 1 this year, there's not a huge difference. We drew with Kerry up in Kingspan Breffni. An absolutely fabulous game. We know, you know, on our day, if we could turn up and everybody performs to their max, then you have a boxer's chance. And I think across the board, I don't care, we played Andy in the challenge match of Meath, I think they have a super team there too. They're not a million miles away. It's fighting that 5 or 10% extra in training psychologically. And if you do that there, you know, there's a big challenge to Cian O'Neill tomorrow. You know, is it a 30-pound hammering? Because I think Cian O'Neill could ignite the countryside tomorrow in terms of how they turn up and perform against Dublin.
I kind of feel like they have no choice but to continue doing what they've been doing this year, which is to try and transition quickly and to be fairly aggressive as an attacking unit. They can't sit back and be the defensive squad that they were last year, can they?
I don't think so, but I mean, they have the players. They have the players to do that. I mean, they've got three full-time pros back in, you know, three big units, and they have a big, strong team. So why not go at Dublin? And I think that will deter them. I mean, go at them the way that have been going on. Why would you change? This is the way they've set out their stall.
Yeah.
They'll have to continue. They'll have to show conviction in that. But that means you know, riding out those periods in the game where Dublin are going to be on top of you, and that's the truth of the matter, and you've got to deal with that.
Yeah, I guess you guys must have thought at some point of preparing your team to face Dublin in the Championship. Like, you know, at some point you're thinking, how would we do against that, because you're in the province. Yeah?
Yeah, well, you got to, you know, if you want to measure yourself against the best, and you're looking at the now. I wouldn't say for one moment that we were preparing to play against Dublin, but I think everybody is. You're watching on TV.
But in January, you're thinking, say things go.
How do you deal with that?
Yeah.
So you're looking at scenarios that.
And so, what would your kind of philosophy be then if you were in those quiet moments when you're thinking about it, and as opposed to actually sitting down and doing the game plan?
For me, you know, at the start of the year, and we sit down and you know, I was thinking to myself, what was achievable this year? You know, we put a huge push to get to another Bourne Cup because we felt, you know, we did the chance to play Meath, and we felt it would have been a good place for us to experience high intensity football. So for us, it was, you know, achieving your Bourne Cup, National League, and get to a Leinster final. That's, you know, that's kind of goals we set ourselves, and then how far we could go in the qualifiers by getting to a Leinster final, it meant, even if, you know, to sit down and talk about beating Dublin from where we were coming from would be totally naive, but to play in Leinster final would allow you into the qualifiers further down the road. But
playing against Dublin, right, say you reach the Leinster final, and yeah, your job is to prepare the team. Do you decide that you're going to go out and be attacking and lose 4-22 to 10 points, or do you decide that you want to lose 2-12 to 6 points?
Look, I suppose you know, like if you give Dublin the ball, it's relentless. Jack McCaffrey and these guys will eventually hand pass the ball to you. I thought Dublin, you know, were poor against Carlow, and they still kicked 18-19 points, and it looked as if they were playing not within themselves. That would be an injustice to Carlow. But they were
third gear.
But they look as if they weren't primed up against, when they got back into Croke Park against Westmeath, I thought they were hopping off the ground. Now for me, Westmeath have serious footballers. You know, they have really good players, and they made them look pretty average. There's two ways you can go about it. You can go out and go gung ho, and it's man on man, and then it's individuals marking individuals, and the Dublin players at this present time are really, really skillful group of players and really good with loads of backing. Or then you can drop fellas in, and they have fellas like McCaffrey and, you know, Fenton and guys like this that can pop the ball through you in 1-2. So they're a complete package. They can play it either way. Mm. So it'd be really difficult. But it's a difficult question kind of to ask now, because that's something that, you know, you can set players up all you want, but ultimately they have to go out and carry this thing through. So in that scenario, you know, you'd have to see what players are available to you, what's your skill set.
What's the easiest conversation to have with the players? Like, look, we don't think we're going to win this game, or this is how.
I'd be surprised if any of us ever had that conversation. I don't think you're going to win the game, but I mean, you got to be honest and you got to be straightforward. You want to compete with Dublin. You got to match them for a couple of things. You got to have that level of physicality, and you got to have that level of fitness.
Yeah,
you got to. I mean, that's a given. That's your starting point. And
you have to decide that in November, though. You can't, obviously, the fitness stuff. You've got to.
Oh yeah, I mean that's the carrot that you dangle in front of fellas. If you want to compete at this level, you have to get to a certain level of physicality and fitness. And then after that, you've got to devise a game plan, and that can vary from match to match or game to game, depending on the players you have at your availability. But starting point for everybody is, you know, you've got to, if you want to compete in any competition, you've got to have the same level of fitness. And don't people try to say, you know, it's easy for Dublin. It's not easy for Dublin. It's not easy for any individual to put in the amount that they're putting in. I know from the guys that I work with over in Ballyboden, I know what Mick McCauley puts into his game. And if you want to compete with Mick McCauley, you've got to put in the same amount of work that he does.
But I think it's a little bit easier for Mick McCauley to put that work into.
Well, he mightn't have to travel as far, and he mightn't have.
But the carrots at the end of the season, are there. But there's another good point in what you're saying. There's an awful lot of those Dublin guys really, really working hard, and mightn't even get to the bench come Leinster final. So
that's the thing, isn't it? Like, he's not guaranteed a place in the team.
You're not guaranteed a place even on the subs bench.
Yeah.
And you know that brings its own intensity into training and stuff like that. And similar to Kilkenny and hurling, they have that. But Andy's 100% right, and 9 times out of 10 when you're talking about fitness and conditioning and stuff like that, that's, you know, that's something like that should be the core standard in all counties. Everybody should kind of have it and should be, you know, striving to be the Dublins.
It takes a period of time to get to that level, because they've obviously been at it now for such a long period that it's their core, and everybody who comes into the panel has to reach their level. So, you know, like it seems to me like Kildare are better this year than last year in terms of their fitness. Obviously, they've got more players who are fully fit than they did last year, so that helps. It seems to me like Meath made a giant leap forward this year in terms of the pace in the team.
Yeah, I think there was always a bit of pace in it. I know the amount of work the fellas have done since the December last year. Is that
whenever you're allowed?
When we started training?
Yeah, that's when we allowed start.
Since the 6th of December last year, lads have made a huge effort. Huge effort, and we made a lot of progress. But no disrespect to anybody, I mean, you're starting further back,
yeah,
just way down the queue.
Yeah.
And as I said earlier, now we have 2 months to sit back and look at the teams that we're chasing.
Getting better
and doing more, so it is difficult in that respect. But that's where guys have to decide what they want,
yeah,
what they really want, and then they have to continue. They have to continue that work. And as I say, I know from the guys that I had over in Bowden, I know what they were doing when Dublin weren't training.
Yeah, and so the clubs in Meath and Kildare and Louth and Cavan, they need to drive those standards too, to a point where, like, the club player is actually driving the county player, and there is a much deeper pool of players who are capable of stepping up to inter-county.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, and as I say, and I don't like to be talking about Bowden all the time, but I mean, I you know, there was a bunch of guys who had three fellas, Declan, Dara and Mick involved in the Dublin team. You know, and Mick was the only consistent player on that team.
Yeah.
So there was a bunch of fellas who drove themselves to a level of fitness and a level of physicality that most inter-county teams are at.
Yeah.
Because they wanted it.
And it makes a big impact, and ultimately they get the rewards for it.
Of course, yeah.
It did strike me that during the league, a couple of teams packed the defence against Dublin and did really well. Like, Tyrone should have beaten them in Croker, and obviously Dublin come back. The Kerry game is a bit different in that Kerry were less defensive, but over the last couple of years Dublin have had some difficulties in dealing with a mass defence, and so I think it's a legitimate way to approach a game against them.
Listen, you can't take them head on. I think Dublin sent a message with Westmeath game there that if you decide to play us 15 on 15, we're going to educate you.
Yeah.
And it's a case of, you know, you either go down with your boots on, or you be smart in terms of how you set up your team.
And what was your approach in the league against them?
Well, we set two men back, so we did. And listen, there were 6 or 7 points in it in terms of that day up in Kingspan, Breffni Park. But to me, the difference in the game was the skill set, where the Dublin's passing of the ball, they do not give the ball away. Their unforced error count, you know, has to be in single figures. You know, it's a big thing that we have looked at this year in terms of Cavan, is the amount of unforced errors. Like, if you look, go back to the All Blacks and that sort of thing, you know, the team that makes the least errors wins most football matches or most football competitions. And that's the thing. Dublin do not give the ball away. Their work rate, their tackling off the ball is intense. They'll try and turn you over between the 250s. So that means their transition from the halfway line into the full forward line,
much quicker.
It's a 6 or 7 turnaround. If we have to wait to go back into the full back line, then it's a 27, 28 second swing in terms of getting the ball from one end of the football field to the other. And that's the thing that Dublin do well. You must meet them head on, but you also must be disciplined in terms of how you set up defensively, because, you know, the prime example is Dublin also have a card in their pack in young Dean Rock, and if you have a free kick somewhere inside the 45-yard line, he's going to be ruthless. But at the same time, it's self-belief. You know, I really do believe, you know, a lot of Ireland is watching what happens tomorrow in Leinster. I think Kane O'Neill has, and the Kildare boys, I hope, accept the responsibility. We played them in Abbottstown earlier on in the year in a challenge match, and a great challenge match, and the one thing we had agreed before we left the field is somebody must stand up to Dublin, because that changes the landscape and the self-belief of all of us around the table here,
so,
and throughout, in terms of get at them, do not let them play their game.
Is the template down against Monaghan, like, where they clattered into everybody in the first 3 or 4 minutes and the referee's going, geez, I can't book everybody? Is that what you do against Dublin?
Intensity of the game. If you let Dublin get into their stride, good luck. You know, it's...
You think Dublin wouldn't do it to you?
Well, they will, that's the thing.
Of course they will. Of course they will. I mean, and Down, I think, gave everybody a bit of hope. I mean, that was a fantastic performance, and they set their stall out very early, and
very early.
Yeah, but what's wrong with that?
Nothing, but like it seems that maybe Ulster football is refereed a little bit more leniently than.
Yeah, well, look, I think that's true. I mean, you know, the variations.
Conor McManus was beaten black and blue in the first 35 seconds, and I don't know if you get away with that tomorrow if you pick O'Callaghan or one of the dubs.
But maybe honestly, you do. Maybe. But you have to understand too, and it's the one thing I have with the hurling. Let the game go a bit. You know, I don't get me wrong, and I'm not rules of the game.
Yeah,
they got to take the black card out of the game. The black card actually encourages the professional foul. 100%. It's the biggest mistake the GAA has ever made in the game.
Particularly in the last 10 minutes of the game.
Especially in the last. But it's a professional foul out in the game. It has actually encouraged a professional foul. Why not let the referee keep the whistle in the pocket for a wee minute and let guys play football? You look at hurling at the top end. What's the one thing people love? There's hitting, there's contact, there's physicality, and the game is played at a very fast level. And I have seen it this year in Division 1, the referees have a tendency to keep the whistle in the pocket and let the game go on. And Division 1 this year was fabulous, yet the minute you go down a division or two, all of a sudden it's black card city and there's more men. You put a guy off in a black card in the first 5 or 7 minutes of a game, he won't pull the card out again.
Yeah,
That's it finished in the main. Well, if you put that card away and let guys get at it and say, listen, find your feet, let them play ball. That's what teams want. And listen, hold on a second. Monaghan is as good a tough man as in the countryside, so they are.
Absolutely.
So, you know, they're well fit to stand up for themselves.
Yeah. Can't wait to see how they...
The difference from game to game, that's one of the things I found in Division 2. The difference on refereeing from one game to the next. We played a game that we played Cork in the league. And you couldn't look at somebody, it was a free. We played Fermanagh the following week. And everybody get on with it.
Yeah.
And you're going, it's just a different game, a totally different game.
I presume that's not because the referees are unaware of it. It's because they're being assessed differently. It's like this week, this is a big deal, and then the next week it's not a big deal. And
sure.
Ultimately, so the assessors have the power to implement that rule change to the referees, like,
I think so. You'd like to think so.
Some quick texts. Please thank Colin for all he's done for Louth football. Disappointing championship campaigns, but Division 2 football will give us a better chance next year, says Mick in RD.
Yeah, that's the thinking. Thanks a million.
The Dubs living in Kildare and Meath need to bring their kids up as Kildare and Meath fans. It's a vicious circle of support in the hinterlands.
A lot of blue jerseys out around them, boy, all right.
Yeah, they're good at hoovering up talent from like just that area, aren't they? Like, miraculously, players getting recommissioned.
There's a couple of guys in Ashburn and Redhouse who've worn the blue jersey over the last number of years.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Well, I think that parentage rule wasn't invented for Dublin.
No, it was like completely the opposite.
Yeah, I think so.
Great to hear some positive talk about Gaelic football and off the ball panel. Not as bad as at the Sunday game. What do you think of the Sunday game?
Okay. I'll be honest with you. Why do we bring in character assassination? And I'm not being any man. I mean, GAA is a fabulous game played by fabulous people, and after the game is over in years to come, you become great friends with people.
Sure.
You don't need to be personal. You can make a comment about the game. Why bring it to a personal level, which I think is embarrassing and it's very disappointing. Talk about the game, talk about elements in the game, talk about how the game should be improved, talk about things like that there, talk about the positive aspects of the game. Why you need to go in and tackle players who are good lads? I have Conor Moyna as an example. He will play for Cavan, so he will, and he might be up at 6:30 in the Monday morning to go to his work, and yet on a Sunday night some guy could come in and totally destroy his character. And I totally agree with this here. The GAA is a fabulous organisation. My children play it, they love it, it is fabulous. We have nothing else, we have the GAA. We do not need character assassinations by our so-called role models and leaders of our game. You know, if they take that out of the game, I know they want to be a game in Dunphy, and that's pretty cool if that's what your role model is, but I would love them just concentrate on the game and the playing of the game and how they fix and make things better rather than going to personal details.
There is some good analysis of it, and if you take it for what it is, it's a programme that shows the highlights of football matches and hurling games, you know. So if you know, I think for me it's been there ever, where, you know, once when the Sunday game's in, you sit down the Sunday night, if you're a young Flynn, you want to see the highlights of the game, and probably there's a lot of career shaped on who they've seen in programmes like that, especially when it wasn't live, you know, back in the day when we were growing up. But, you know, some of the pundits are over the top apps, you know, definitely, and some of them have good comments to contribute. So, you know, as I said, if you get beat up about it,
it's grand, is what you're saying.
Ah, look, it's...
And it's important. Look, I mean, people love the Sunday game.
It's not something I even issue with, you know what I mean? It's. I sit down to watch it every Sunday night because I'm watching highlights of the sport I love.
Sometimes I think the commentary is a little bit lazy. I think fellas are just, you know, it's easy to say some of the things, and, you know, some of it's not quite accurate either.
Yeah.
You know, over the last couple of weeks, I've noticed maybe I'm paying a little bit more attention now because I'm in the spotlight a bit more. But I think some of the commentary can be a bit lazy,
which is disappointing considering, yeah, like, these are people who are actually getting paid for it.
Correct. That is my 100% point. If you're going to be getting paid for this, go out and do your homework. Get your facts right. And as Matt's saying here, there's absolutely no need to be personal about this. You can comment on the game, the way the game has gone, without having a go at individuals.
I missed that incident. Was there a sending off or something, or was there not a sending off? Is that what had happened and was highlighted?
I think it's about you getting your name in the newspapers on a Monday, on a Tuesday, on a Wednesday, and it's more about you. I just think you don't need that there. There is some. I think Tomás O'Shea has some great comments to make about the game, so I do. And I think if they concentrate on the game, as I said, we all grew up. We loved the Sunday game. I still love the Sunday game. But my suggestion is, even when the game is live and that there, let's be positive. Let's be positive in terms of promotion of our game. I think it has been a great championship this year. I think there's a great bounce to the championship.
They do have to call bad stuff when they see it too, because obviously that's, you know, again, the aspect of being professionalism. Like, there's a difference between character assassination saying, well, that, you know, this, what they're trying to do doesn't work here because they've got it wrong, or this mistake leads to this.
No, like, critical analysis. I don't think anybody will complain about that.
Yeah.
But as I say, I've found over the last couple of weeks, or maybe even a little bit more, that some of the comments are just inaccurate and untrue.
As
and
in, they've looked at the result and gone, I've made my mind up on the basis of that, as
correct.
Opposed to...
Maybe talk to somebody and say, okay, well, so-and-so did this, and you're going, okay, hang on, that's not the way the game went.
Yeah.
So they've all been in dress rooms too, so they know what goes on. I find it funny the amount of times they speak about, you know, lower division teams having poor results in the championship and they're always one-dimensional. You know, like, so... You know, stuff like that I find funny, all right. But all these guys have been in dressing rooms, they know what it's like. And
it is funny, none of the football guys have been managers. I mean, obviously McStay left to become a manager. The hurling panel definitely has way more recent and recently retired managers on their panels. I find it funny that it's
fewer
former,
them,
former
fewer
players
have done celebrity
almost
banish, though.
And that's the same, is it?
It is in their heads.
Yeah. On that note, my thanks to our panel this afternoon, Colin Kelly, Manny McLean, and Andy McEntee. If anybody missed it, we'll stick it up on podcast. Thanks, lads, and best of luck with your summer off. Do you know what you're going to do now for the rest of the summer? Are you taking up golf again? Going to watch some football matches?
No, tried that last week, didn't like it.
I'm on a tour of Calvin, so I am here, so I'm heading to Virginia for the weekend. So
well, enjoy, lads. Great to have you with us this afternoon. Thanks.
Cheers.
Very much.
Thank you. Cheers.